greet you again this evening in Jesus' precious name. It's been a privilege being with you these past few services, getting to know you. I wasn't sure what to expect when coming out here, but it's been a pleasure, and I thank you for your prayers, and I thank you for your hospitality. Didn't get hungry, that's for sure. And it'll be nice having a few more friends when we get to heaven, knowing you all. I'm not sure how that will be, but my desire, my hope for you all here in this church, this community, wherever God calls you, you can be faithful. Each one of us could be faithful to him when he calls us home or when he returns for his children. Practical pointers for family worship. Where do you begin? I like to first read a scripture, Psalm 127. I like to read Psalm 127. And again this evening, like I've mentioned before, I'm not going to stand here and act as if I have achieved. We as a family, we're a work in progress, so to speak. And I don't know your households well, but you know, from here, it could look like as if you would have everything just right in line. But we're all human, and it probably does us all well to, including myself, to hear a message on something like this. Psalm 127. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. I would venture to say that all of us desire to have a godly home. We picture in our minds a desired result for our homes, don't we? We have something in mind. We want to have faithful children, if God so blesses us, children that desire to serve Him, serve God through their lives, to carry on the values that we value, and to love God. But you know, there are so many unknowns in life. From the day of when the marriage vows are said to the sunset years of life, we don't know what life will hold. But God does. There is one constant in our lives. There is one pillar. God never changes. We can depend on that. Society today, even churches today, pastors today, I've heard different times of how many pastors that don't even believe that the Bible is true. How can a man of God not believe that the Bible is true? How can he lead a church if he doesn't believe the Bible is true? We have to believe that it is truth. People say, well, there is no absolute truth. Really? Are they absolutely sure of that? Either that statement includes itself or it doesn't. We believe the Bible is true. You know, a godly home doesn't just happen. We know that, don't we? There's a lot of work. A lot of labor, a lot of praying. But see, did you notice what he says here in Psalm 127? Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. If God isn't in it, it's in vain. For us to reach that goal, We must put it in God's hand. It's not in our control. You know, children, they're such a precious gift from God. And I shudder at the price that will have to be paid for all the young lives that are snuffed out before they can even see the noonday sun, feel that warmth, fresh air in the face, the voice of the parents. It's murder. We hear of abortions and we think, we kind of get used to it. According to WHO, World Health Organization, there's an estimated 40 to 50 million abortions every year, about 125,000 every day. And then you have people that rail against God for all the evil in the world. If there is a God, why wouldn't he send someone to help us out? Well, how do we know that God didn't try to? But we don't even let them see the light of day. You know, the Christian home is being attacked on every side. And we look out and we think, how in the world can we, how can we make it? How can we get our children to be what we want them to be? Again, look at what it says, Psalm 127. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. We can't see everything that's coming. We don't know the evils that we will face. God can. And if we don't hand it over into God's capable hands, we will fall. We can never be watchful enough. We can never see everything coming. So we let God direct our paths. He says, as our arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. How do we get those arrows to hit a target? You know, an arrow in a quiver isn't, well, it's worth, yeah, it, don't get me wrong, it's not, I'm not saying it's not worth anything, but for an arrow, a hunter, if he wants to shoot an animal, that the arrow has to be shot. It can't just stay in the quiver. It has to reach its mark. And as we look at our children, those young souls, we want that arrow to hit its mark. How do we get it to the goal? Again, without the Lord's help, our efforts are in vain. We may think, I've made such a mess of my home. I've made such a mess of things. I need to clean this up and then let God take over. Well, we heard the other evening, Brother Joseph said, don't try to clean up your life before you give it to God. Just give it to God. Let him clean it up. And you know, that's the way we do with our homes as well. We make mistakes. We give it into God's hands. He can clean it up. With God's help, we reach that goal. With God's help. We want young children that grow up to love God, willing to stand in the gaps, like we heard the other evening, keeping people from falling into eternal ruin, into that abyss. Those little ones given to us, they're like a blank slate. Waiting to be taught, trained, most of all, loved. Without love, training is not very effective. Human brain, it's marvelous. It's a marvelous thing. If you look at the sense of sight, I was talking with my eye doctor here a few weeks ago. He's I would look on him as a Christian. He's not. He's definitely not a conservative. Conservative believer, 69 years old, and he's talking about his daughter that she's studying a part of the eye. They're still not quite sure how it works today yet. But we agreed that just in studying the eye, you look at the mechanics of it, it should never work the way it's set up. But it does so wonderfully because God has designed it to work. In the human eye, There are 127 million cells called rods and cones. They're in lines and they receive light. And they send those little rods and cones, they send messages to the brain. But your brain doesn't receive a picture, so to speak. You know, we can see an object at the end of our nose, and we can see stars that are light years away. Those cells in our eyes send signals to the brain. Your brain gets 1 billion of those messages every second. But it interprets them and translates them into sight. You think that just happened? You think that's just... It took a million years of trial and error, and now we have the wonderful thing we call sight? How about our hearing? God has created us, every one of you, every one of us, and everyone has worth. Children learn how to behave socially and emotionally by the people that they are close to. From the time they're very young, as they grow up, they become, at least in large part, like the people that they are close to. They look at others to see how to behave, how to act. They're a blank slate, so to speak. The first 3 years of life are very important for proper training and teaching. But again, without love, that training and teaching isn't very effective. Love helps the brain to grow and develop. I believe it's very important to teach our children about God at a very young age. If we miss that, those first crucial years, it is very hard to overcome. And you know, I think mothers especially have a unique and a special privilege of, as they hold their little children, to tell them about God, to teach them Bible verses. I'm not saying fathers don't have that opportunity, but fathers are usually away from home during the day, and the mother is the one caring for that child. You have a special opportunity to start when they're young. But you know, gathering the family together to worship is also very important. A very important part of the Christian home. Everyone worships something. And I believe it's very important that we as parents point our children toward God. You know, I don't ever remember doubting that God exists. I can never remember a time in my life that I doubted that God exists. I can never remember a time where I didn't think that God cared for me. I never doubted that Jesus really died and rose from the dead. Why? There are so many people in the world today that doubt those things. I believe it was in large part because of the teaching and training that was given to me from a young age on up. And children, young people, never throw that away. You have a unique opportunity that very few people in the whole world have, is the training and the teaching of loving parents, parents that are married to each other. Of course, everyone has to make a personal choice as it comes to age of accountability, but you know, those early years of teaching and training are very important in guiding a young one to God, to Christ. In Ukraine, I saw what happens when fathers worship the god of alcohol. The ruin, the despair of those children. We should be thankful for what God has blessed us with. So is family worship, do you think it's really important? Can't children learn about God at church? Shouldn't the ministers be the ones telling the children about God? Don't they have Bible school and Sunday school and Bible class during regular school? Don't they have lots of opportunities to learn about God? maybe we think, well, with my job and I'm on the school board or whatever it may be, I don't have time. The church is going to have to take care of those things. I'm doing the work for the church anyhow, so the church can take care of my children. Or maybe we have teenagers and we have little toddlers. I can't make it practical for both. The young ones can go to Sunday school and they can learn about God there. You know, reading about family worship, there are different writers that have said the last 100 years or so, family worship has largely been thrown away. If you look at the church in the last 100 years, has it prospered or has it not? Has the church become more godly or has it drifted with society? Is there evidence in the Bible that we should have family worship? If we look in Genesis chapter 4, we have the story of Cain and Abel. And we have Cain and Abel bringing their sacrifice to God. And God being accepting one sacrifice and not accepting the other as the first. Where did Cain and Abel learn to bring a sacrifice to God? Where do you think they learned it? From their pastor? Where did they go to church? They learned it from their parents, I believe. Their father and mother. How about a few chapters back in Genesis chapter 8? Genesis chapter 8 and verse 20. And Noah built an altar unto the Lord and took of every clean beast and every clean fowl and offered burnt offerings on the altar. Right after the flood, Noah coming out of the ark and building an altar to God. Family worship. He sacrificed, it appears, 1/7 of the clean beasts and clean birds. You think, what a waste. Only six more of those kinds left. But worship was important to Noah. Family worship. Why do you think his family went into the ark with him? No one else did, only his family. Don't you think it was because his family knew how important worship of God was? What is worship? Joshua chapter 24. Joshua chapter 24, verses 14 and 15. Joshua 24, 14 and 15. Now therefore fear the Lord, and serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood, and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Serving the Lord includes worship. What is worship? Is it just something that we observe? We come together to worship. Do we watch things happen? No, worship is an experience. You have to experience worship. Otherwise, it's empty. The primary purpose of a home is to reflect and distribute the love of Christ. Anything that usurps that is idolatrous. The primary purpose, quote, that I read. The primary purpose of a home is to reflect and distribute the love of Christ. How are we doing in that? Challenge. Only when holiness and worship meet can evil be conquered. I'd like to read a few verses in Deuteronomy chapter 6. I wish we'd have time to read the whole chapter. Deuteronomy chapter 6. the importance of teaching children. If you look across the verses, verse 3, "Hear, therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, and that ye may increase mightily, as the Lord God of thy fathers hath promised thee in the land that floweth with milk and honey." And then he says, verse 6, "And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates." And he goes on and talks about how important it is to choose to serve God. Don't be like the other nations. Don't be like the people around you, he says. But he said, teach them diligently unto your children. Do you think once a week is teaching diligently? If we wait till Sunday, if our children only hear about God on Sunday, how much are they actually getting? Is that being diligent? It's much more than just sitting down and reading the Bible and singing and praying. Worship is every day, all the time. There's an opportunity to teach children. He says, teach them diligently when you're in the house, or when you're walking, when you lie down, when you rise up. If you're out in the field or in the garden, as you're planting seeds, you can talk about how the seed goes into the ground and dies. And when it comes up, it's a plant that is useful. One seed in itself isn't, how would you say, you can't make a lot of bread with one grain of wheat. But if you plant that grain of wheat into the ground and it dies, comes up as a plant, there are more grains. And as we, in our life, as we give our life to God, as we die, the plant that comes forth is useful. Or maybe you cut down a tree for firewood. The tree looks really nice, but on the inside, it's hollow. Some of us may look really nice on the outside, but inside we're hollow. If we look at the mountains, we look at the trees, we look at the grass growing, we can teach our children that it points to God, someone who made it. We have many opportunities to teach our children to worship God in everyday things. Special services at church, communion, baptism, different services that we have. Children say, well, why do you do it this way? It gives us an opportunity to teach. And please, don't tell them, well, ask the ministers. I don't know. I don't know why we do it that way. And I want to show you some biblical evidence for why it's the father's responsibility to teach the children. Genesis 18, verses 18 and 19. Genesis 18, verses 18 and 19. The Lord is saying, "Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him, for I know him, that he will command his children, his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him." You see, the favor of God rests upon Abraham partly because of why? Because he was willing to teach his children about God. And God found favor in or blessed Abraham because of that. It is the father's responsibility. You know, when it comes to reading the Word of God, reading isn't our primary goal. It's not our number one goal. Hearing God speak is our number one goal. Reading the Bible is the means by which we hear God speak. It's one of the ways we hear God speak. Don't forget that. As we teach and train our children, it's not about reading a whole chapter or two chapters or a whole book at one sitting in family worship, but it's about reading some verses and talking about them, asking questions. What do you understand this to say? If they have questions, answer those questions. Hearing God's voice is our goal. We want to hear what God has to say to us. Exodus 12 and 13. There are different times in those two chapters where it's very clear that according to the law, if your child had a question, you had better answer it, because the law required it of a father. If your child had a question about why do we do this thing, why are those stones in the river, why this or why that, it was the father's responsibility to answer those questions. Psalm 78. Psalm 78. He's talking about things that we have heard from our fathers. And he says, verse 4, we will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. Verse 6, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. Understand? The reason we teach our children about God is so they're not like the generations that are stubborn and rebellious. It says that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God. That is why it is so important. One of the reasons why it is so important that we teach our children. And again, it's not just a 20-minute or a half-hour set aside time, which is very important, and I'll get to that. But we can teach our children in everyday things, point them to Christ, point them to God, explain. We don't totally understand God. We don't understand all their... We won't know the answers to all their questions. It's okay to ask someone else. But by and large, most of the questions I think we as fathers and mothers can probably answer. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. Before we think that it's just in the Old Testament that fathers are told to teach their children, Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. See? Fathers, we are told to do it. What is our goal for our home? What are we setting our sights on? The father's responsibility. Sometimes the father isn't able to do it. We're not willing. Or it might be a widow, and then it falls on the mother. But by and large, most of our homes, the father is there, and he is to answer these questions, to lead out in the home. And, you know, we hear Christians talking about how bad this world is and how bad things are becoming. And they are. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, should we be surprised that the world is going the way it is when the church is headed that same path? The church is called to be a salt and light, and the church is made up of people, homes. Is the church a reflection of the fathers in the homes? I wonder. It seems to me that it is. Are we doing our duty? The early church fathers wrote about family devotions. Ignatius, who was a boy in Antioch, saw Paul there, I understand, said, fathers should teach their children the Bible. Clement of Alexandria preached that husband and wife should practice united prayer and scripture reading every morning. In 1557, John Knox wrote to his congregation before he was sent into exile. He said, and I quote, you are bishops and kings. Your wife, children, servants, and family are your bishopric and charge. Of you it shall be required how carefully and diligently you have instructed them in God's true knowledge. And therefore I say, you must make them partakers in reading, exhorting, and making common prayers, which I would in every house were used at least once a day, at least. That was John Knox. George Whitefield preached that there must be a revival of family religion before a revival of a spirit of piety would come. Again, the father's is the spiritual head of the home. Family worship glorifies and honors God. If children see that their parents have a deep respect and honor for God, I believe they will not forget it. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And we say, well, there's many people that depart from the teaching of their parents. But you know, I don't think they really do. I think it's there. I really think it is. They can't get away from it. We can't get away from those things. If we sit down and we think a little bit, you know, we can remember those things that our parents taught us. We can remember those things that we heard as we grew up. It's very important. Family worship, it centers a home on Christ. It encourages peace in the family. You know, and it's also a teaching or a training tool for worshiping as a church. You know, if we get our children to sit still while the songs are being sung, to help with singing, to sit and listen during the reading of the word, to be quiet during prayer, it helps them. It helps train them for worship together as a church. You know, family worship shows where our priorities lie. It's not just once a week or twice a week that we have time to worship God. I think family worship also reinforces the teaching of headship, biblical headship. Christ, the head of the church, and the Father, the head of the home. It helps pass on the faith to the next generation. You know, we think, well, maybe family worship is a thing of the past, or we don't really need it anymore. Jeremiah 6:16. It doesn't name family worship, but it says, thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths, and where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. You know, sometimes we might think, well, we know a little bit better than our parents did. We don't have to do everything the way they did. We don't have to do everything the way they did. Don't get me wrong. But it says, walk in the old ways. That is the good way. Don't throw things away that have worked for years and years. How do we balance work, church life, and family worship? For some, mornings work better than evenings to sit together as a family and to have devotions. For fathers that work away, which I don't know, I suppose most of you do here, dairy farmers are home morning or evening, but for fathers that work away, often it's evenings that work better to set aside time for worship. It can be at the table after a meal. It can be in the living room. It can be different places, but it should be a place where we don't have a lot of distractions. Turn off the phone and other small distractions or big distractions. You have to plan. If you don't plan for it, it won't happen. You have to prepare. You have to persevere. It might seem like work to gather everyone together, but it's very important. Make time. It won't just happen. We think, well, what should it consist of? We have little children, we have older children. How do we reach them? I believe there are different ways that we could do it, and there are different right ways. It doesn't have to be the same every time, I don't think. It doesn't have to be always reading a few verses and talking about them. It doesn't always have to be a Bible story. It can be different things. But if we don't have the same every time, I think a schedule is a good tool so that everyone knows what is on schedule for tonight for family devotions, or if you have in the morning. One thing that we have started recently is on Monday evenings, we sit down and we talk about what we remember from the services on Sunday. Take notes. Talk about those things, what you remember. You'd be surprised once you start how much you can remember. If you don't think about the Sunday services again during the week, you'll totally forget what the message was last Sunday. Does anyone remember what the messages were? It helps us to remember. Just a suggestion. It can be Bible reading and discussion. It can be Bible stories. Maybe if you have younger children, you read one level of Bible story some evening. If you have older children, you read another level of Bible stories. It's not, again, it's not just seeing how many verses we can read, but it's in, we want to show the principle of worshiping God and hearing His voice in our singing, in our praying, and in the reading that we do. Be consistent. Although the content of your worship may vary, worship shouldn't vary. The content of what we do may vary, but our worship should be consistent. Now, sometimes there are things that come up. You have church services in the evening. Sometimes that interferes with family worship. You might just have prayer or prayer and a song, something like that. But be persistent. Again, our goal. What is our goal? Heaven. We want to reach that goal. An early start in the right direction helps so much. An early start in the right direction gives a foundation to build on. 3 John verse 4. 3 John verse 4. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Be considerate. Let's be considerate. Let's give our children a foundation to walk on. Point them in the right direction. Everyone has a choice to make, but I believe we can help to make that choice a little bit easier. And I'd like to again read the first verse of Psalm 127. Psalm 127, verse 1. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. Even if we have messed up, we give it to God, and He can clean it up. Let's put it into God's hand. Allow Him to guide you. Without Him, we labor in vain. May God bless each one of you.